It's Thursday, and that means Climate Thursday. Today, we are joined in studio by a regular Climate Thursday guest from Duke's Nicholas Institute, the Senior Policy Associate, Ashley Ward. Ashley, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Glad to have you back in the studio. And I understand that you were just in Aspen.
I was supposed to split my time halfway between Aspen and Baltimore and ended up getting snowed in Aspen, which most people think that's not a bad thing. But I will tell you, I am a delicate southern flower, Andrew. It was hard.
I'm surprised that when you said you were in Aspen, I was thinking Aspen in October. I imagine some nice hiking.
It was earlier than expected. Yeah, yeah.
So I was surprised to hear that there was snow involved in this trip.
And I think it wasn't the snow so much that delayed the flights. They're obviously used to snow, but it was just some really dense, low cloud cover that really did us all in.
So apart from wilting a little bit in the cold, what were you doing in Aspen?
So the Aspen Institute and Duke's Nicholas Institute hold a joint forum every year. This was the Water Forum on Disasters. And so I was thinking all about disasters last week.
And what was kind of the format of this forum? I know when they have these get-togethers, sometimes they are a little bit different depending on where the actual event takes place.
It's a really wonderful format. They bring in folks from, across, a range of specialty, private industry, public agencies, NGOs, academics, a really diverse group of folks, and it is a roundtable discussion. That sort of different parts of it are led by different topics. So to dive deep on different topics. And it's really a organic conversation between people who've been thinking deeply about these issues. So it's wonderful just to even listen in.
So what were the big takeaways for you? What stood out?
So one of the big ones, and we've talked about this before on the show, which is just the complexities that communities have in navigating all of the federal resources and programs that are available to them. Like, for example, and I think this is the correct number, when a disaster strikes, there are as many as 19 federal programs that are across a variety of agencies for which communities can access to get dollars for recovery and response. And so my question immediately is, how in the world are these communities, and especially some of the people in charge of securing this money, they themselves are part of the disaster. Maybe their home is also flooded. They're supposed to go through this really arduous, difficult process of applying for these programs. And some of the applications are hundreds of pages long. And so it's no small feat, right? And so it goes back to one of the things we've talked about before, and that is when people say, hey, what can my community do to build resilience? One of the things your community can do to build resilience is to build the capacity in your community for a person who understands how to navigate these programs. A lot of these dollars are also resilience dollars these days, so you can apply for them ahead of pre-disaster resilience. And it's really important. Communities have to be proactive in thinking about how they can access these programs and build the capacity and the capability to do so. Maybe governments could pool their resources and, different agencies in a community government could pool their resources and hire one person who could do this. I've been thinking a lot about a common app. This is something I've been thinking a lot about, the need for us to develop a common app so that people... It works just like the college application system, right? So you would fill out a series of information that would actually give back to you which grant programs through a host of federal agencies would be applicable to your community and your situation. So like things like that. But until that time, communities need somebody to help them navigate.
So what does that actually look like at the community level? Like, I'm sure that's a position that some communities do have already. Do we know what would that position be called?
Yeah, no, there are certainly some, I would say, more affluent communities that have folks that manage grants for them. They are grants. So it would be somebody who understands, how to write and secure grants. But this is a very particular, this is not just philanthropic grants. These are, navigating a federal system of grants, particularly those around resilience and disaster. And that's, there's many different pots of money that are available to communities. And as we talked about before, a lot of this new money, probably the largest investment we'll ever see in our lifetimes for resilience and climate change. And the real key is, how do we make sure the people that need the money actually get access to the money? And so it's not so much about me giving or anybody giving from the outside, giving a community, you know, an idea of what they need to implement. When people say, what can we do? What you can do is make sure that your community has the capacity to secure the dollars you need to implement the programs that you know are best for your community.
It's Climate Thursday. Our guest is Ashley Ward, a senior policy associate at Duke's Nicholas Institute. And she just escaped Aspen after being snowed in there for a little bit. And the topic of a conversation, ironically enough, was disasters. So what else did you learn, or did that conference get you thinking more about?
Another topic that came up, which I thought was fascinating and something I haven't paid a lot of attention to in the past, is the role that insurance plays. And, you know, it takes months, if not years, to get full payout through FEMA for, compensation when a disaster strikes. In contrast, it takes weeks to get payout from an insurance company. And what happens during this period of time is that lag time is communities often struggle and they go into a decline post-disaster when they're not receiving the funds to recover quickly enough. I mean, people move out of the community because they're looking for services and other opportunities. But also it can destroy the credit rating, the credit score of individuals and the credit rating of a community, right, to be in that situation. And so these are really long-lasting impacts to sort of the financial health, but also the physical, emotional, mental well-being of the community members when they sort of linger in that recovery phase. And so the real challenges to this, and one of the things that I learned, is one of the most significant payouts for uninsured property that FEMA makes is to public buildings and property. And so another thing that communities can do then to make sure that their recovery period goes by quickly is to fully insure their public property and buildings. I know that's not an exciting thing for taxpayers to talk about. And the other is for communities to really think strongly about something called community-based insurance, which the more I read about it, the more I think it's a fantastic idea. Basically, it's a way of pooling the resources of the community to buy insurance for community members. So I don't know if you saw this in the news, but something like less than 5% of the homes in Florida, in Central Florida, are insured for flood, and less than 15% along the coastline are insured for flood. So 80% of the people that were hit just now with Hurricane Ian have no flood insurance. And so think about what that means. I mean, you know, that is an enormous lifetime financial burden for the people that it hits, and often people who are least in a position to deal with it. So community insurance programs are something I think communities should really take a close look at. Lowers the barrier to entry for everyone, protects everyone.
That's an excellent point, because I feel like flood insurance in particular is already kind of hard to get. And I can only imagine that whole flood insurance system is going to grow more and more precarious as we see more flood events going forward, which is inevitable.
And I think waiting, if you say, okay, oh, I'm not in the flood zone, right, the quote-unquote flood zone, which had been mapped decades ago in most cases, you know, one of the things I've heard people that work in disasters say is any home can flood at any time. We're not just talking about hurricanes. We're talking about flash flood events from heavy precipitation, which is increasing significantly in this area. And so, you know, how do we protect the most vulnerable among our community from those unexpected extreme weather events, and helping part of resilience? Resilience is how quickly we bounce back. And part of that is getting the financial resources we need to do so. Insurance is key.
We're visiting with Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute, and we've got just a couple minutes left. Is there anything else from Aspen that you wanted to touch on?
Not from Aspen, but I got some interesting news this morning. Someone shared an article with me that the Mexico City mayor, her name is Claudia Steinbaum, she's a physicist and a big environmentalist and is poised to make a run to be the next president of Mexico. And this would be the first female to do so in Mexico. And why is this even on my radar? Well, first of all, a female scientist running for president is an awesome thing. But second of all, it's a real big social change for Mexico. And it also, she's been very strong advocate for renewable energy. And it puts Mexico in a position to really lead Latin America in the renewable energy space and the production of electric vehicles, which they already lead Latin America in doing. So, like, watch this space. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And if we're going to start to get more leaders elected around the world, that would put pressure on leaders here about investing in renewable energy.
Yes, I'm all for more scientists and more females in leadership positions. All right, well, let's talk. We've got just enough time to talk a little bit about what you've got coming up next. You said you're traveling again.
Yes, so I head out to Seattle and then Portland. And Seattle is the American Water Resources Association, and I'll be leading a session there. But then the exciting thing I'm really looking forward to is Portland, Oregon recently passed a water data law, and we're working with the state agencies in Portland to start to map out a path forward on how to modernize their data infrastructure so they can better manage their water resources. It's an exciting time for Oregon.
Excellent. Well, when you're in Seattle, if you have an opportunity to go to Bakery Nouveau, it's a French bakery. Everything there is excellent.
I will make sure I make it there.
Thanks for coming in, Ashley. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.